With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
From Postcard from the Past and Wardour Studios, this is Podcast from the Past, the Postcard Podcast. This is the podcast where I never know whether postcards will send me, as we interrogate those frequently beautiful little cardboard oblongs to try to understand the memories, meanings and stories held by picture postcards. I'm Tom Jackson, and today I'm delighted to say that my guests are no strangers to the podcast world. They are actors and hugely successful podcasters, Kerry Shale and Lucas Hare. Luke and Kerry, welcome to the podcast from the past.
Thank you
very much.
Yes, yeah. We always talk at exactly the same time.
That's the secret. That's why I do this show on my own. Now, Lucas Hare has been an actor since the mid-1990s. You might have seen him in the theatre, in The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime, or The Permanent Way. You may have seen him on your television, in The Crown, how they managed to turn the uneventful life of the royal family into a drama, I don't know. And since 2018, Luke has been co-presenting the brilliant podcast, Is It Rolling Bob? Talking Dylan, with fellow guest today, Kerry Shale.
Yes.
Now, Lucas, you come to the studio today with a PL27 postmark, what's that?
Yes. Well, you asked me for a postcode that I couldn't shake, and that is a place in North Cornwall, in Polzeath, and my family have had a house there since the 40s.
Oh, really?
And, yeah, and I've been going there my whole life, pretty much every summer. Not quite, but certainly my whole life. And it was, if I have a spiritual home, it's there.
And it's still in the family? So you can
it's still in
it?
The family, but my grandmother bought it in the 40s, and it was just her and four kids, and we're two generations on from that now, so it's being divided, you know.
The calendar year gets shorter,
yeah,
I suppose.
2 weeks in August became 5 days in October, half term, and things like that. But no, it's really lovely. And the only thing that's kind of sullied for me over the years is that what was this wonderfully childlike, innocent, spiritual home place is now where David Cameron goes on holiday. So I try not to
really
think about that.
Yeah. Really close?
Well, there was a local thing about putting a phone mast up in this tiny village because there's no mobile phone signal down there. And I think he was on the phone to Barack Obama once and was slightly cross that he couldn't hear him properly, so campaigned for a mobile phone mast, and that's...
But he clearly doesn't listen to this podcast because he should have sent a postcard.
Yes.
That would have been the perfect way from that part of the world.
I'm sure he doesn't listen to this podcast anyway, so we're safe.
Well, that sounds very good to me. I like the sound of that. Kerry Shale is an actor and writer whose credits are frankly too many and too prestigious to list fully here. But you'll have seen him in the theatre perhaps in Frost Nixon or His Girl Friday at the National or in True West or Henry V or one of his six, count them, self-written solo shows. On television, you might have seen him in Patrick Melrose, Mr. Selfridge, Doctor Who, The Trip, and he's been in films too. But Kerry actually spends a lot of time in rooms not unlike this, and not just doing his podcast, because he is frequently in radio plays and readings, and he's a very often heard voice on the BBC. And his latest original radio play, The Kubrick Test, I think it's called, will be heard on Radio 4, I think, soon after this podcast goes out. But obviously, you might be listening 5 years hence, and then you've missed it. You'll have to go back to the BBC Sounds app or whatever it is. Now, Kerry, when did you last send a postcard?
Ooh,
I used to send postcards all the time whenever I went anywhere, but the modern age took me over. So I think I probably stopped sending them about, 7 or 8 years ago. Much as I love them and I love sending them and receiving them. So I think I was in New York 7 or 8 years ago. I love sending them from New York because they have lots of stupid, cheap, tacky postcards.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's probably the last time I sent one.
I didn't ask you, Luke. How about you? When did you send a postcard?
I was trying to think about this. I think I can't remember sending a postcard after about 1997, which is also the year I got a mobile phone. So,
that may not be a coincidence.
Yeah, yeah. I think because I remember sending a postcard from New York actually to my then girlfriend, now wife, and I got her address completely wrong and guessed the postcode.
But
it still got to her.
Ah, very good.
With no accurate information there at all.
She shake the postman by the hand.
Yeah, and that was 97, so about right.
Very good. And Kerry, what about a postmark stamped on you? Where would that be?
It would have to be whatever the postmark is for Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada. I know that my parents still live there, and their code is R3N something, something, something.
How do you get R3? Is there
I have no idea. It's, you know, some
just
bureaucrat
code,
in the post
right.
office somewhere. Manitoba is MB, but that's basically what's stamped on me because, I grew up there. I left there basically as soon as I could. I was just turned 18 and left. I couldn't take
at
the winters.
18.
Yeah,
but there's still a lot of Winnipeg in you, do you think?
Yes.
You can't escape that?
There is. And it's so funny because I've left so long ago. I was talking to my parents the other day, FaceTiming my parents the other day, and they were saying, you wouldn't believe how cold it is. and this was the middle of January. I said, well, I would, you know. I would definitely believe it. They said, no, you wouldn't believe it. You wouldn't believe it. It's
but wouldn't you expect them to be used to this by now?
Well, yeah, we have this conversation every winter.
Right.
And I said, I grew up there. They said, no, it's 25 below. It's 25
really?
Below.
Okay.
I said, I know. I grew up there. It was always 25 below. Anyway, that's what it was last week in Winnipeg. And listen, it was 40 below when I was a kid. I mean, 25 below is
okay, so this isn't some
balmy day.
Climate catastrophe. It's just
no,
cold
this
winter.
Is nothing to do, no. In fact, it's scary when it's not 25 below because sometimes they'll say it's only, 5 below and you'll go global warming.
Right.
Yeah.
So if you live in somewhere with relatively extreme weather, do you still talk about the weather all the time? Is that
apparently,
is it a human thing, not a British thing?
I guess so. Certainly my parents do. I guess you can't. I mean, there's something I think intrinsic. When you really are in deep, deep cold, where when I was a kid, it was before they'd invented, fluffy anoraks with feathers in them.
Yeah.
You just had to wear many, many, many layers. And
like Scott of the Antarctic.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Totally like that. Because the wind chill comes down from Siberia. So with the wind chills, like 65 below. I mean, it's insane. And of course, it was wonderful. Being in the 50s, they'd send you off to school in a blizzard, wearing 14 layers of clothing. And so, yes, you would have to say, by George, it's cold. Definitely is cold. You really would have to remark on that, yeah.
Very good. Well, it's relatively mild here today, I'm pleased to say. Well, before we discover the cards, and there's a few cards, actually, that Luke and Kerry have brought along, I'll give you a quick one of mine. This is a past postcard card, like I do on the Twitter and in the book and so on, where I've taken an old card and just a few lines from the back. So here's a card, the first one. This is, I think that's Hookham, is that pronounced, in Norfolk?
Yes, Hookham, I think.
Is it Hookham?
I think it's Hookham.
Oh, gosh. Well, it's a multi-view, so 5 different images, and they've sort of made the central image tall and thin because it's got a sort of some kind of column in it.
I used to see that from the road.
The Cook Monument.
You drive past it on the way up to Norfolk all the time.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And I think that's Cook, who was an agricultural innovator, I think. Anyway, what do I know? 1977, and it was sent to Clacton-on-Sea by someone called Philip, who gave the recipient 4 kisses. And the message that intrigued me was just a snapshot, really. On the beach and quite near us was an old lady. On the way back, an officer made conversation with the chauffeur, and he said it was the Queen Mother. So I guess probably from Sandringham, not that far from there.
Yeah, it is. Sandringham's quite near there, yeah.
So I suppose there's a lot of talk about the royals at the moment and a sort of snapshot from a different age, really, and people looked out and saw the Queen Mother on the beach.
It's local newspaper worthy, I think.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's it. This is a dispatch on the back of a postcard. One more like that. This is a little bit earlier, I think. This is another multi-view. Bognor Regis in black and white. Five views. Central image is the West Sands and Pier. And this is, well, it's certainly pre-decimal. Can't see the date on it, I'm afraid. It's sent to Farnborough in Hampshire by a family with a series of initials. And it's quite a nice card, actually. The message, it's a little story, really, isn't it? We came home and flew Deborah's kite in the field. The string broke, and Mick had to negotiate a ditch, barbed wire, thorn bushes, and a troop of angry bullocks to retrieve it. So there you are. It's like a sort of episode yes, of Some Mothers Do Have Them.
Yeah, with a sort of Paul McCartney lyrics, kind of flavour to it. You know?
how do you get
Desmond,
that?
Well, you know, that Desmond exactly. and Molly and all that stuff. Oh, it just sounds very, very specific with the names.
It does. You know? It's like a rejected
Beatles
family.
Song. They're going to be specific.
Of course,
oh, very good. Anyway, just to let you know at home, images of all these cards are going to be on the website, on the blog, postcardfromthepast.co.uk, so you can see for yourself we're not making this up. Now, Luke and Kerry, you've been kind enough to come to this new super studio we're using today with some postcards of your own. Now, I think we're going to look at them in some batches because we've come so heavily loaded, which is great. Luke, what's the first little batch of postcards you've got for
us? Yeah, it's a batch of two, and it's part of a lot more than that, and it's sort of cheating. I went interrailing, which I think the kids today still do, when I was about 19. And I went with a friend called Ben, who I'm still in touch with, and we failed to go to more than one country.
Because you perhaps have just bought a ticket to that country.
Yeah, well, we agreed early on that it'd be nice to do Italy properly, which we failed to do as well. We stayed, I think, for half the time in Florence because we couldn't really leave because we liked it so much. But I would write home and... I suppose today this would be a blog because it's just a sort of stream of consciousness. I'd write six or seven postcards at a time and then stick them in an envelope. And they would all be fairly dull and by the time they arrived, almost certainly out of date and irrelevant.
So these were sent home to your family?
Yeah, to my mum and my brothers. And the one, this is from Venice, on the 25th of August, 1991, 12:30 p.m.
It's important to get those details.
Yeah, right. Honestly, as if I thought it was important. And it says, it is now pointless to put any of these cards or letters in the post, as I will be able to give them in by hand in about 2.5 days. I just thought, you know, it's so strange because every sentiment that you would normally express in a postcard, I now do in text messages.
Yes.
But that sounds like an obvious thing to say, but there's something about ephemera. There's something about a text message. To me, I always think a text message is more ephemeral and a little bit more trivial than an email, which is a bit more official and important.
And the hierarchy of communication.
Don't get him started on emojis.
No, don't.
Do not mention emojis.
So where does the postcard fit into this structure?
Well, I don't know, because some of them I have are very brief and very text message-like, but this is more like a blog. And yet, the thing about postcards is that as you're writing them, you know that they're going to take a good 3 to 5 days to arrive.
Yes.
And you're sort of undercut, your sense of topicality and importance is undercut as you're writing. Because you know that by the time it arrives, this will have happened. It will not be particularly interesting. Doing it anyway.
But do you think that sense of having to be topical, it actually didn't cross your mind then? And that actually that's the modern thought. There's no point in me saying, have you noticed that Obama has been elected president because the person you've texted it to has already been watching CNN or something.
Yeah.
So there's that sense of everything having to be urgent. Maybe that was a slower time.
Maybe, except that I am very aware. I'm saying things like, you know, by the time you receive this, I will be home.
But maybe that's because you wrote the postcards at the end of your trip.
Yeah,
like a typically sort of bad correspondent.
Exactly.
But I'm interested in the fact that you're actually trying to communicate ideas, because whenever I would write postcards, it was just, for me, it was just, you know, something funny.
Mm.
It was something funny and quick and big writing and no time. Mm. Whereas your writing is very small and there's a lot of stuff on there.
Yeah, it makes it sound like one of those
notebooks. It's a completely different way
of
using postcards.
But I think when you're, whatever it is, 18, 19, and you're sitting outside in a cafe in Florence, you want to be seen to be writing something and something quite important and wordy.
Yeah.
Because it makes you feel important. You suddenly think you're a great, you know, a great literary figure. You've travelled to Europe in that way people do.
You are Henry James.
Yeah, I am. Basically, you're Henry James, even though you're writing a...
I am.
What Jamesian gems are there you can share with
us? Well, I'm writing it as if nobody has ever travelled before. I mean, honestly, when I was 19, I knew everything, which is so fucking tedious.
You were so much older then.
Oh, of course. But it says, of course, I can now say all sorts of useful Italian phrases. For example, I am waiting for my friend. I have a bad cough. A large bottle of fizzy mineral water, please. And then it says, what really matters is that I can now return to England actually knowing that I miss it when I'm away. Ooh. I can return refreshed, fulfilled, slightly sunburnt, slightly bruised, slightly fitter, smellier, more hungry, and longing for a familiar environment, my own bed, my own room, my own surroundings, and not having to catch endless trains to the other side of the country with my life strapped onto my back.
Wow.
And I don't know, it's interesting that I'm saying at 19 that I had to leave the country to feel nostalgic or homesick, because I've always been slightly embarrassed about my country, now more so than ever. And I think it had occurred to me then that you have to go out and get some context in order to really value the place that you come from.
I think these are quite profound thoughts, actually. Yeah, I'm impressed.
Yeah, so am I.
do you recognise this chap?
Only his self-importance. Only. No, and there's one thing. We also failed to get to a lot of bits of Italy, which was, again, I mean, ridiculous. You got a month to see a country and you fail to get to half of it. But we wanted to go to Sicily, and it said, I hope that one day we will be able to just get on a plane to Palermo and see the bits we missed. And I have been to Palermo since, and I'm very, very happy to say that I did do that, and it's a wonderful place.
But I think you got it wrong, Lisa. I think as soon as you go somewhere like Florence, you're stuck there. It's too lovely.
Well, that's what happened.
Yeah, you're not gonna bother going anywhere else because your brain can't take in any more. You're just, you know, the joys that. Well, I remember interrailing and ending up in Florence and finding it very, very hard to leave.
Yeah, we were there for 2 weeks. Yeah,
I'm always stunned when people come to places for only 2 days. It's the American way of doing things. It seems to me like people come to London and only stay for 2 days. Yeah. Oh, yeah, we did London.
Well, it's the way we did Paris, isn't it? You don't see a city, you did a city. Yeah. That's just ridiculous.
Yeah, I'd love to do the same thing. Just go to... basically, with my wife, we go to places for 2 weeks and, you know, just walk around and...
Yeah, well, getting lost, it takes time, and that's the good bit.
Yeah.
I look at a lot of postcards, and I do see them where people are on cruises. So they've been on a Mediterranean cruise or something, and they talk about, you know, we didn't like Malta, we decided we did like Cyprus, and it's very much we've done this, done that, didn't like that, and it's or didn't went to Morocco, didn't like it, because I think it's that, you know, they're there for 3 hours, and if they get hassled in the street for 5 minutes, their whole experience is gone, and a whole country and a whole culture can be written off in like that, But then again, if you only have time to do that, then I certainly couldn't sneer at it. I mean, it'd be lovely to have time to go everywhere, but people don't. So, very good. Well, thank you for sharing your teenage trip to Florence and not far beyond. Kerry, what's the first card you've got for us?
Well, it's a picture. Yes, it is a picture of me and my wife, Suzanne, painted by our mutual friend, Rufus Gerard Wright, to use his painterly name. Rufus Wright, he's an actor. And we were in Frost Nixon together.
Okay.
We shared a dressing room. And I knew he was a painter, and I saw some of his paintings, and I'd always wanted to, you know, have somebody paint me.
Yeah.
And so I commissioned him to paint Suzanne and I from a selfie from this. And I said, there's one proviso, which is make Suzanne look good. I don't care what you do, because it was for Valentine's Day. It was a surprise.
Well, that must have taken a bit of planning.
Yes, it did.
Good work.
It did. And, you know, so this was what I have in front of me is the postcard of the actual painting. And then there's this quote on top, "You're the strangest person I ever met," she said. And I said, "You too. And we decided we knew each other a long time." That's from a piece of art that we saw in Portland, Oregon, when we were traveling together. And we went to this art gallery just before we got on the plane. And then we saw this thing and thought it was beautiful. And we said, well, we must buy this, and then we had a card at home. And anyway, so then I said, Rufus, can you please put this on the postcard?
So layers of meaning.
Yeah, and it's just a nice thing. And Rufus,
it's got a kind of a slightly sort of Gilbert and George look. Those things he does with photographs and
yes, it does.
I don't mean the pair of
you. No, the artistic. No, the thing that he. Yes, exactly.
I mean the graphic style.
Yeah, no, I agree. But I'm very fond of it. And in fact, when I told Suzanne I was coming on this thing, she said, "Oh, are you going to bring the postcard of us?"
Obligatory. Yeah. And I think that's only the second time that in this or the other studio, any studio we've been doing this show, that someone has brought in a picture of themselves on a postcard. The other one was Haircut 100's Nick Hayward, and I brought the card in to show him.
Oh, really?
So you're in very, very esteemed company there. Well, thanks for that. But now let's go back to your early days in London. And you've got some cars that you've kept from your sort of bedsit archive.
That's right, yeah. So I lived in a bedsit. I got here in 78, and I stayed in a little room in the house of a mad actress in Clapham South.
Very nice.
Not particularly. And then I moved. I was so thrilled to
I'm all for keeping the South London house prices up. So very nice.
That particular house was just a little too crazy. And then I got my own bedsit, and I'd heard about things like they don't have the word bedsit in Canada. They don't have the concept of bedsit. And I knew there was a play called The Bed Sitting Room, and I didn't even know what a bedsit was. But then somebody, a friend of mine, said, "Oh, I know of this bedsit," and I was desperate to get out of the crazy place in South London. So I got this bedsit, which was on Gloucester Place, which was fabulous because it was just a street away from Baker Street, which was the big hit that summer in 78 when I first came here.
God, this is a long time ago. Yes.
Yeah, long time ago. And so this was in 79. So I had this bedsit, and it was ideally located, but very grotty. I mean, you know, it was a proper bedsit. I had to put coins in the fire, and, this was in the 70s, and I didn't have a phone, and I had a little gas ring, and I was thrilled. You know,
But you had freedom. You know, it was yours.
I was from Winnipeg. And I was living in London.
Do you know how cold it is in Winnipeg?
Do you know?
I've got no idea myself.
let's get on. So I didn't have any money, but I was working in rep. So I would go out, do 8 weeks at Derby, and come back and do eight weeks in Northampton.
Weren't stuck there all the time.
But I was there. You know, when I was not working. I didn't know what, it's a long story, but I didn't know anybody when I first came to this country. And so I didn't have that, you know, I still didn't know that many people. So it was, so basically the first postcard that I have in my hand here is this, I didn't realize it was by Lucian Freud. I'd never heard of Lucian Freud, but it is by Lucian Freud. And it says it's from the Walker Art Gallery in Liverpool, and it's called Interior Near Paddington. And I think it's from 1951. I think it's actually quite famous, but I didn't realize it at the time. And it shows what appears to be a short little guy with glasses smoking a cigarette, which I used to back then, with his hand clenched in a fist in a sort of a tatty room, because you can see the carpet is a bit sort of tatty, with a sort of dying houseplant.
Seen better days, isn't it?
Yeah, and the city outside. And it reminded me of me. So this is the second postcard with me. There's a theme emerging here. And
But he's ready for something as well, isn't he? He's on the edge of something?
He's on the edge of something, yeah. Ooh. Yeah, he's... It made me feel... It tapped into my feelings of both anger and loneliness, which was a thing that I felt a lot in the bedsit, because I really wanted a girlfriend.
Right.
Or any friend.
A postcard is a poor substitute.
Yes. So that was on my... But I didn't have enough money to... I don't know where I got... Presumably I bought this postcard somewhere. But I papered postcards all over the bedsit. So I had about 100 postcards. And they were all... At the time, I remember, I was really into surrealism. And so there were a lot of Salvador Dali. And then there's the second one, which I discovered. I only kept these two, which is a postcard of Michael Redgrave playing Hamlet at Stratford-upon-Avon in 1958. I mean, I bought it, obviously, in the late 70s.
But you might have bought it in Stratford? Or?
I probably did, because when I came here to do a five-week course, acting course, care of the Central School. And so I was only supposed to be here for 5 weeks. And part of the deal was that they bought you tickets to Stratford, and you went out to Stratford, and then bought tickets to the West End and, you know, the National Theatre, which was fairly new at that point. And in the midst of all that, I was dumped by my then girlfriend, and I did an audition to try to get her back, just so I could talk to her, so she would talk to me. And
sorry, how do you do an audition to get your girlfriend back?
Well, there was a thing in the Stage. I picked up a copy of the Stage, the newspaper,
yes.
And there was an audition in it. And I thought, if I call up, it was an open audition. I thought, if I call up and get this audition, she will have to speak to me, because she had stopped speaking to me. We hadn't had an argument or anything. She just dropped me.
Oh.
Like one day she stopped
speaking. Because you weren't credible anymore. Is that
I don't
right?
know.
So you
I
had
never
to get
found,
a job.
I never found out. No,
oh,
I never found
okay.
out.
If you're listening.
I said, I've got this audition,
late.
And she was not interested.
Oh, okay. She would just give you validation or something.
No, anyway, then I got the part. But I got the part. That's how come I'm here now.
Ah.
So we did go to Stratford, and I had to quit the course because I went into rehearsals for this job.
Right.
But I managed to get the postcard. And he's looking very fragmented.
This is tortured, this picture.
Yes. But again, there's something romantic about, you know, young, tortured. I was a tortured young actor. And
but he's wearing what looks like a crumpled shirt, but he's got a crumpled face.
Well, he's wearing
one
of those Jerry Seinfeld, puffy yeah. shirts. It's a great picture. I think he's quite well known, Brian Neal.
It does sound familiar, I don't know.
Who was the guy who wrote Quatermass's Terms? That was Nigel Neal, was it?
Quatermass, you mean?
Quatermass.
Oh, yes, okay. Yes.
I think that was his brother.
Oh, okay.
But I think he's still alive and I think he's actually quite well known.
Right.
Anyway, I think it reminds me of, sort of romantically, of that sort of time, which was full of, you know, yearning and excitement. And whenever I got a job, I would call home. I would say, Mom, Dad, they say, do you know how cold it is? And I'd say, I got another job. I got a job at Northampton Rep.
Yeah. And when does that stop? I've not really noticed that stopping myself.
No,
anyway.
It does stop. To me now, you get a job, unless certain jobs excite you, and other jobs you think, well, how much does it pay? Can I get time off to do
voiceovers? You do a lot of short jobs as well, don't you?
So yes.
Your jobs that you come and you do, and you go and you on to the next thing.
Yeah. And I get little short text messages if I text you about something and you say, I can't today, I'm playing a chicken.
Yes.
Or something.
No, it's true. My regular gig now is I'm playing a chicken in a video game. And it's a big, it's the lead in the video game. My
lead chicken.
So, yeah.
Very good. Did you ever do this thing of postcards sort of stuck on the wall with blue tack, Lou?
Yeah, I thought not so much postcards. I had, when I was a teenager and at the second of my two boarding schools, I surrounded myself with pictures of film stars, posters and things like that. And rather like you, I think I didn't realise I wanted to be an actor quite yet, but I was certainly entertaining the notion of it. I had lots of, posters of Marlon Brando and James Dean and people like that, people I thought were cool, you know.
And there was a bit of a fashion for pictures of them in the 80s, wasn't there? Because they were sort of coming back via that fashion verb.
It was the Athena years.
Yeah, exactly.
What happened to Athena? But I remember having a James Dean Athena poster and around about the time I saw Rebel Without a Cause for the first time and some of the images were more interesting than the films. I mean, I had the poster of Brando on the bike in The Wild One. You know, have you seen the film, The Wild One?
I've
Christ,
never seen the
it's
film.
It's don't. Images. It's
yeah,
it's
terrible,
appalling.
Terrible film, except for Lee Marvin.
Yeah. Yes, that's
he
true. That's
it,
true.
Yeah.
And the great line, you know, what are you rebelling against? What do you got? But other than that, it's the imagery that's important. And so that poster I can remember right now. But also, I was at a boarding school where we had these little rooms to ourselves, but they share the ceiling. They're little cubicles, so you could decorate them however you wanted them. Too, and actually, you would cover them in pictures to try and make them homely.
Very good. I was looking through a load of old postcards the other day. Not that I owned. I was looking at buying some, and I came across some of those Athena ones, and it threw me straight back to the 80s. I thought, are there no more Athena shops? Of course, no. They've gone. They went 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And that fashion for kids by young people buying these cards that were somehow expressive of what they wanted to be or so that reflected that doesn't happen now.
Well, posters don't, I think, happen in that way, do they? I remember when I was a kid, I had a poster of Jane Fonda in my room, room I shared with my brother. Yeah, Jane Fonda on a beach naked with her legs crossed completely.
Good
you
Lord.
Couldn't see any
Lord.
Bits, but I did. Jane Fonda was my...
But now...
It's got very warm.
Yes, yes. But we had poster. I had a poster of Bobby Kennedy also, and these sort of aspirational posters. Do young people put up posters?
Well, I was going to say, has the, and I hate the word, but I'm going to say it just for the purposes of the conversation. But has the selfie taken this over? If we no longer have images of other people by which to show other people what we think we are, if now you've got just narcissists holding their phones in front of their faces and saying, look, this is me, that's taken over the
Yes, well, perhaps Kim Kardashian is the equivalent of your poster, but you don't need to have a printed poster because she's on your phone all the time, doing lots of, and endless new images of doing whatever she's doing.
Yeah.
Maybe that's it. Maybe it's basically the printers are losing out all round, the whole business of printing stuff. That's the paperless world.
And I suppose you would no longer want to be identified by using an image from 30, 40 years ago of someone else, you know, when you can do yourself on a phone.
Mm.
Very interesting. Well, we'll see if the printers, if there are any printers out there who are suddenly find themselves short of work, you have my sympathies. A quick extra card from me now, and this is one that I was thrilled when I found and have held on to for this moment.
Yeah.
Because this is a card from 1966, 19th of April. Don't get too excited. It's not from Bob Dylan. Don't you?
I know what he was good playing.
But it's from someone called Trevor, and he's writing to his friend in Yorkshire, and he says, "The picture, by the way, is of Monk Bar in York. Rather nice picture, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Walter Scott is the publishers, and they did this very sort of fine quality to the pictures. Mm. The sort of detail on it is just different from. It's not quite shiny. It's sort of matte.
It's quite the cars in it are. Older than 65.
Yeah, well, pictures always, they tend to always be.
Yeah.
Anyway, it says, "Dear Mick, it's okay for Friday. Any time between about 10 and 11 will do." So that's a text message, isn't it, now? Yeah. And he says, "If you want those singles, they're £3 each." So 3 shillings each, 15p. "Subterranean Homesick Blues, Maggie's Farm, Like a Rolling Stone. I think his latest is great. It's called One of Us Must Know.
Yeah.
I've not got Bringing It All Back Home LP yet, but I am getting it on SAT. See you on Friday, Trevor."
Oh, that's so fabulous. Thank you.
Oh, my God.
Because,
of course, Blonde on Blonde had been recorded, but we didn't see it in this country until the summer.
And we're in April.
April. So One of Us Must Know was put out as a single. Oh, my God, how exciting.
But I listened to your great podcast, and you've got this kind of diary in your head, Luke, of the dates of everything,
yeah.
Which is terrific. So I knew you'd be able to sort of jump in and work out what stage we were at.
I have a couple of friends who insist I'm on the autistic spectrum, but I think I just remember dates, you know, that aren't important.
Right.
I can't remember anything that's actually important.
I think he spells subterranean correctly, which is very impressive.
Yes.
Yeah, that is very impressive.
I can barely spell it.
Yeah. But also, you know, it's only 66 and he's getting rid of these?
No, I think he's saying he's seen them in a shop.
Oh, I see. I thought he was going to sell them to you.
No,
right.
I think stuff was so, not scarce, but yeah. Things were so much less easy to get hold of that he'd spotted them. From where's he writing from? He's in York.
Yeah, you'd buy them in the hardware store, in the city,
and his friend is out in a village in Yorkshire.
Yeah.
So I suspect he can get hold of them in the local record shop.
Well, one of our podcast guests, Michael Gray, I know spent some time in York in his childhood, and he said that it was incredibly hard to get hold of these records. You know, you'd go into... There wasn't a record shop. There was an electrical shop or something in the basement that sometimes sold records. And if, you know, the record was famous, they'd sold out of it, and otherwise they hadn't heard of it.
Right. You've got a double bind.
So presumably your friend is saying, no, they've got them. They're there. Yeah. You know, that's quite a big deal.
I think Billy Bragg said the same
thing. He did.
He had to go to some other shop that had records under the counter.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
You used to have to work hard, didn't you, for stuff? And it's music is just everywhere now. It's so easy. It's amazing.
I noticed when you said Mick, I thought, ooh, you know, Keith. but that's how Mick and Keith met, wasn't it? That they both had LPs under their arms.
Yeah, yeah,
and one had Howlin' Wolf, and I can't remember.
It was Rockin' at the Hops by Chuck Berry and the Best of Muddy Waters.
Muddy Waters.
Well, actually, I enjoyed on your podcast, without talking too much about other podcasts, but when you had Kenneth Cranham talking about the record shops in Streatham, just up from where I live. And that was fascinating that, you know, up and down Streatham High Road was kind of, this was like an outlet for this music from the Mississippi Delta.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
Really.
And
know,
people used to come over to his house to listen to the records because you couldn't hear them anywhere else. Yeah.
And I suppose the other thing about this, particularly with the Bob Dylan thing, people don't associate now, I suspect, him as a singles artist. They think of the album and which album? And it's a lot on your show. People say, which is the great album? Well, they're talking about buying 3 separate singles there. And, you know, do you like this one? Do you like that one?
So I wonder if Trevor knew that he'd already heard 2 of the songs from Bringing It All Back Home just by these singles. I don't know.
Yeah. But in fact, I mean, often singles weren't on albums in those days. They were, you know, famously the Beatles and so on. Frequently they weren't. Well, there you are. A little bit of Bob Dylan sneaks its way into Podcasts from the Past.
Quite right, too.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices
down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
You're listening to Podcasts from the Past, the Postcard Podcast, and I'm thrilled to say that my guests today have already spent a lot of time in my headphones. They are the hosts of the brilliant Is It Rolling Bob podcast, Kerry Shale and Lucas Hare. Luke, you've now got some cards from your childhood, I think.
Yeah. I mean, to backtrack a little, you've done something here to me. When I knew I was coming on this podcast, I knew that I had some postcards knocking around and some letters, and I hadn't seen them certainly since we moved into where I live now 15 years ago. And I have a feeling that they'd been in a box for about 9 years before that. Wow. And I was going to find them this Sunday. I thought, I've got one Sunday to find them. I'm going to find them. And, of course, they were at the bottom of the last box I looked in. But
so they were there?
Yeah, I found them and then some. I found a decade of letters that I wrote to my parents from boarding school from 1979 to 1989 and got a bit, you know, teary, frankly. It was all a bit much. And I found one that's not a letter. It's on a postcard. So I thought, well, I can bring this in.
That counts.
And as with many of them, there are lots of things other than the content of the postcard that are interesting. For example, my first letter to my mum from boarding school when I was seven, I spent a good 10 minutes just looking at the way she'd ripped the envelope open. It's been ripped open at the end, not at the top. It was
you
the
are
first
looking for clues,
letter.
Aren't you?
Yeah, you know, it all became very interesting. But this one is a postcard of Salcombe in Devon. I think I might have been there with my dad, but he had definitely been there and he'd bought a postcard for me to write to him from school.
Oh, so he'd prepped it for you, is that
right? He'd prepped it. He's written his and my mum's address in his writing. That's when they were still married, which they wouldn't be for much longer. He probably put a stamp on it too, 12p, and the stamp says, "Be properly addressed, postcode it." This is from the 17th of October.
I love those funny postmarks.
I know, 1980 this is from, so this is when they used to do things like that. And it says, in quite good writing, I have to say, so I would have been 8. "Dear Mummy and Daddy, thank you for my letters. I came 4th in first orders, and I'm 3rd place in form, capital F. I got your letter this morning. Lots of love, Luke." And that's it. And I was texting my brothers, and we were saying, what were orders? Yeah. And all we talk about in our bloody letters is where we came in orders. And I think it was just
like the ranking
in the class of these very small children, you know, obsessed with doing
that. Well,
they
drummed it into you that it matters, so
yeah,
I guess
that must have been the thing. And yeah, because even 5-10 years later, I'm still writing about exam results and didn't I do well in this? And actually, this is quite rare. This is a letter that doesn't demand that one of them record something off the television for me. For the entire 1980s, a decade for which I have no real fondness, you know, I was obsessed with asking them to record Blackadder or the Rock and Roll Years. Do you remember that?
Yes, little weird modern videos.
Yeah, well, I wanted them all. So, you know, and then I think my mum wrote to me and said, "I'm so sorry, it was 1962 and I missed it." And I was apoplectic. But they're just so demanding.
I didn't tell you as a completist at all.
Oh, God, I know. Even then. But I loved finding all these letters because they are... I didn't know I had them. And I said to my son, you know, I've just found this letter that I wrote when I was 7 that I've never seen before. And he went, well... obviously you have, Dad, because you wrote it. And I thought, fact is I haven't seen it for 40 years and I didn't realise it existed.
And also, as the correspondent, as the person who wrote it,
yeah.
You lived with that postcard for a very short time. Because it wasn't stuck on your fridge. Sent it away. Well, your parents were, but you just wrote it, you gathered your thoughts together briefly, wrote it, and it was gone. So you had a less of a relationship with it than the recipient, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, my dad would have spent time buying it and then... they would have kept it once they received it, and it was mine very briefly
with joy,
in the middle, with its weird bleached colours, and have you said this on your podcast before that this is 1980, but the postcard looks like it could have been any point in the 20 years before that.
I know,
even 30.
I mean, obviously the picture's always taken before it's printed. That makes sense. Can't be late. But no, there's a lag. That I think it's one reason people think of postcards as nostalgic is that the pictures are old anyway.
Yes, and they look antiquated before you even send them.
Yeah.
And whether it's anything to do with Photo Precision Limited in St Ives in Huntingdon, I have no
idea.
Excellent,
one of my favourite companies. They're no longer in business then.
Yeah.
Very. And there's another one of these?
There is another one, and this is fast-forwarding a bit. This is to December 1996. My mum died that year, very young, and I... took some time with that, as they say, and was at home for a while. And then I was an actor at that point. I've been an actor for a couple of years. So I felt that I had to kind of get on with things. And this job came up that was more than just a bit of occupation. It was an international tour of The Tempest with a company called Shared Experience. And we went to various places. We were in Japan for 3 weeks and Korea for 2. So this letter is to my dad just before I'm about to come home for Christmas, what would actually be my first Christmas without my mum. So that was kind of creeping up on us. And it's from Seoul, and it says, "Dear Dad, this is more or less the view from my hotel room in Seoul. I've been here a couple of days, although we haven't seen the theatre yet. It's very different to Japan, but once I'd got used to filthy streets and noisy traffic again, I was fine. Japan was wonderful, especially Tokyo and Yokohama. Whilst in Yokohama, I went on the largest big wheel in the world and was a lot less scared than certain hysterical members of the company." Some of whom I'm still in touch with. "I hope Sam and Ferg," that's my brothers, "have kept you up to date from the letters they've received, and I hope you got my last postcard. Everything okay on the home front? I'm really looking forward to seeing you all and spending Christmas in Suffolk. You're right. Living out of hotel rooms and a battered suitcase is beginning to take its toll. I'm quite ready to come home, or will be in 10 days. Longing to see you. Lots of love, Luke."
Oh, that's really good.
Yeah, it was a funny old time, as I say, because I had this awful emotional loss. And then I went straight into not only work, but travelling. I'd never travelled that far in my life before. I'd certainly never travelled, for 10 hours and then had a day off and had to do Shakespeare with jet lag. And that was interesting. And by the time we got to 2 weeks in Seoul, most of the company were just going, I want to go home now. I'm exhausted. And you start to see the kind of, not to bring up Bob Dylan again, but you start to sort of see the exhaustion in people's faces when they are touring musicians or the touring actors, and you just think they've had enough now.
But I get the impression you're not really a huge traveller, because you've read, 4 cards, and 2 of them you're saying you can't wait to get home.
Yes, that's true. But, it's very nice to go travelling, but it's so, so nice to whatever.
Yeah. But you don't say, this is great, I could live here, or
no,
it's not for you.
You're right, I don't. And yet, I wonder why that is, because I'm not particularly... I think I'm attached to the idea of home, but I'm not patriotic. I don't have any sense of
home
pride.
Doesn't have to be patriotism, does it?
No, but I don't...
you've got to live somewhere.
Whenever I come back to England now, I just think, oh, fucking hell.
But when you come back to your home behind your front door,
different.
You must home's be pleased,
different. But like so anyway. Baggage reclaim at Heathrow, when nothing works, you just think, oh, shit.
Yeah, Heathrow's a good one as well.
Yeah, that's true.
Try Luton.
No, don't say the L word. No.
Well, I think that's a really... I think that's a very articulate card as well, because, you gave us the sort of background to it, but it's all there.
Yeah.
You've got all the stuff about what's going on professionally, a little bit of tourist detail, real, you know, heartfelt concern for the family, and I think it's really just a really. That shows what postcards are good at, I think, that card. I think it's really good.
Yeah, and I'm thinking about all sorts of things now that I'd forgotten, like how lovely the company were to me. You know, I turned 25 out there, and it was my first birthday without my mum, and they took me out, and they showed me a good time, and it was really a really wonderful time and a really wonderful bunch of people.
Maybe it was the right thing to do then anyway.
I think so, yeah.
Very good, very good. Now, Kerry, we've got a funny old man here.
Are you calling me a funny old man?
Not so much of the funny. No, tell me what you got here.
No,
I recognize this artist.
This is a postcard of Mr. Natural, who is one of the main characters drawn by the artist Robert Crumb, who is one of my heroes. I put him up there with Bob Dylan and...
Really?
Yeah, the greats. And I was just thinking about... Well, I realized I actually have three pictures of Mr. Natural up in my office. And I've got one on the door where he's sort of singing Keep Your Sunny Side Up.
Right.
And I've got another one. He's been doing Mr. Natural for his... I think Robert Crumb now is probably about late 70s, maybe even pushing 80.
Yeah, I thought he might be older.
And I first saw him when he did... I first saw his work in Zap Comics. When I left Winnipeg, I hitchhiked down to California, and then I was living down in Berkeley, and it was around that time when Robert Crumb's comics would be on everybody's floor. After you had a joint, you would sort of start leafing around and finding Zap comics and whatever. And then he was on the cover. He did the cover of Cheap Thrills, the Big Brother and the Holding Company.
Of course. He was sort of one of the visual icons of the counterculture.
Yes,
wasn't he really?
Absolutely was. And funnily enough, he was never a hippie. Ever. He did do LSD quite a few times, which is what unlocked this vision of things like Mr. Natural, who is basically this old, bald, white hair, with a long beard. He's a holy man and a fool and a sex maniac, basically.
Right. And you're talking about Mr. Natural, you're not Robert Crumb.
This stuff is very autobiographical. So the card that I've got just has a picture of Mr. Natural sitting in a chair with these sort of weird musical notes coming out of his head, because he's very into music, old time music, like nothing past 1928. I shouldn't think. And these musical notes, I was just looking at for the first time, there's one real musical note, and the other two are made up. They just kind of look like musical notes. So I've just been a huge fan of Robert Crumb's, because he did a series of comics. Like, I'm not a collector, but I have pretty much everything Robert Crumb has ever done in the original, comic book form. And there's one he did called Id Comics.
Oh, yeah,
and they are the scariest things you've ever seen, because he just wrote stuff that came right out of his, kind of animal brain. Anyway, so I love him. So I brought that in just because it's very important to me. But then I also, as I was going through albums and things, I discovered that I had a postcard of another Robert Crumb thing that I'd put in an album, because I used to have a radio show on a primitive digital network called One Word Radio. And this was, I looked it up. It was in 2000. It was around 2002. It ran for 3 years.
Oh, right. That was a long time.
Yeah. And I can't remember how often. And basically, it was before you could look stuff up on the interweb easily. So I would bring in my own CDs, and I'd make a playlist each week, and it would have a theme. And so I had the dog listy, the cat listy, all the various listies.
This sounds familiar.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Well, Bob Dylan did it about 5 years later. My wife was outraged. She said, dare Bob Dylan? I said, well, they're just lists.
Don't sue him. Don't sue him.
No. I ended up doing, they changed the time slot. It was a bit like podcasting, because I thought, nobody's ever going to hear this. Right. Actually, it was so small, it was so esoteric that I could say anything I wanted and play anything I wanted.
Wow, what freedom.
It was, except towards the end, they were trying to get more commercial. And I had gotten, like, show 48 was the Jesus listy.
Okay.
And I decided that I'd just take, various things. And they were all from my CD collection. So I knew each song, and I would talk. I had a script. I would actually read from the script, because I knew what I wanted to say things. And with Jesus Listy, they said, We told you it's going out at 4:30 in the afternoon now, because it used to go out at like 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock at night. As you can see, it's on the car, 11 p.m. Yeah. But then they started putting it out at 4:30. But I didn't take any notice of that. Yeah. And anyway, it was a good time while
but you can have Jesus any time of the day, can't you? Or were you saying something that could cause a little bit of...
I wasn't saying anti-Jesus, but I was doing things like Tom Waits does a song. He's got a Jesus song, which is somewhat. And then I think I did Flesh Color. What is Bob Dylan's Flesh Color?
Christ the Glow in the Dark.
Yeah. And I wanted to be a little edgy with Jesus.
Personal Jesus. Jesus doesn't want me for a Sunday.
Yes, in fact, I did. I think I did Your Own Personal Jesus. Mm-hmm. And anyway, that got me a bit of trouble. But this brings back memories, because I changed a Robert Crumb cartoon into this postcard, and it's a crazed person who's going heh.
And he's writing. He's a writer.
This is the original bit of Robert Crumb, and I tippexed out what he was writing, and I put Jimi Hendrix, Bob Dylan.
It's become your playlist, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. Lucinda Williams, Howlin' Wolf, Jonathan Richman, who I can never convince anybody to like. But
So you briefly inhabited that Robert Crumb world via that flyer.
I also tried. One time I played Robert Crumb on the radio. I was always ranting about Robert Crumb to people. And this BBC radio guy said, we're doing a little thing about Robert Crumb. This was about 25 years ago. Would you like to choose a very short Robert Crumb cartoon and dramatize it and play
brilliant.
Robert Crumb? And so I did, which was thrilling. And then I met his agent at a book signing, and I tried to get him to do a poster for one of my one-man shows.
Yeah, yeah.
And they said, no, sorry, he's too busy. But I did sort of correspond with Robert Crumb's agent, which was somewhat thrilling. And I talked to, there was Gilbert Shelton, who did Fat Freddy's Cat, who was a contemporary. And I went to a thing that he did, and I talked with him about Robert Crumb. But I've seen Robert Crumb perform. He's a very gregarious guy. Mm-hmm. He came here just a few months ago, and he did a concert at the place called the Troxy in the East End.
Oh, yeah.
And he came with Terry Zwigoff, the film director.
Who made the film about him, and they're
still friends. And they still are sort of very kind of enthusiastic, kind of rudimentary musicians.
Right.
Crumb plays the banjo, and Zwigoff, I think, plays the another stringed instrument. But they brought in a couple of really shit-hot jazz sort of 1920s jazz musicians from the States who flew over to be basically, and they were just in awe of them and sort of trying to keep time. And then Robert Crumb was interviewed. He's really he's a very cranky, eccentric. He did a magazine called Weirdo as well, which I have all the episodes of. Anyway, he's the sort of patron saint of weirdos, and he's a very honest guy, sort of in a way the opposite of Dylan in some ways, because his stuff is so autobiographical and he doesn't disguise it. Anyway, I can go on about him.
And you've stuck with him.
Yes, I have, because he's gone through all sorts of stuff, because he got married and he had a kid, and then he moved from California to the south of France. I know all this because I read his stuff. And the last thing he's pretty much, I don't think he's doing too much new stuff now, but the last thing he did was the book of Genesis.
All right.
And he did every
the Bible, not the
Bible.
Pop group.
Yes, exactly. Yes, yes. He did the. You can find it in the remainder bin, the original book of Genesis. But he illustrated the first chapter. I'm not very big on the Bible, but it's every word of it.
Oh wow.
He just as a challenge, and they said, "What are you going to do next?" He said, "I thought I might try the Quran."
No, oh, well.
He's that sort of guy.
Yep, yep. Well, we'll expect to see him in the papers then.
Yes.
Very good. Well, look, my head is spinning from these cards and images and memories. And thank you both so much, Luke and Kerry. I'm thrilled that you've shared these cards with me and with the listeners. Another quick reminder for everyone at home, we're going to have images of all these cards, the pictures from them, on the blog, postcardfromthepast.co.uk, so you can see that we haven't made it up. They're all real, and you can experience a little bit of it yourself, including one last one in the past postcard style from me. This is Loch Ness. There you go. Mm-hmm. It's a J. Arthur Dixon card. They used to have this sort of, I can't describe it. It's a sort of faded kind of photographic treatment.
Yeah.
Very pretty. And the card is from 1963, and it's sent to Rickmansworth in Hertfordshire from someone called Christine. And it's a kind of, it's like a curse, really, I think, or a kind of threat. It says, "I must bring my projector over and show you some of the places we visited." Oh. Imagine getting that through the phone off the hook.
Is that it?
No, there's a little bit more than that. But that's the bit I chose as the curse.
Yeah, that, because people used to do that with their holiday snaps, didn't they? They say, "I must show you my photographs." And you think, oh, God, how long is this going to take? And a projector. Well,
projector kind of takes it to the serious level.
That's, we're going
to
have a meal, then we sit down, and you will watch my
There is no escape.
Well, it's going to be painful even before you see the pictures.
Oh, yeah.
The whole business of the projector.
Yes.
And your heart. Your
can you,
heart
can you see that all right? Sorry, is it working on the screen? Yeah. I'll have another drink.
This is us.
Oh, God.
Anyway, well, before we let Kerry and Luke out to take some refreshment at Sansom's Diner, I've got just one more postcard for you both to have a look at. It is customary for us to end sound effects on this one with one of these. So that's what for you to look at.
Wow.
Is that a... yes, that's a playable postcard, is it?
It's a record postcard, yes, exactly right. So perhaps you could describe it for me.
Well, it looks like the interior of a church or a cathedral, and it's basically a paper 45 single, but expanded into a rectangle. So there's a hole in the middle, and if you hold it up to the light, you can see a single. You can see the grooves on the what's the opposite of the play out groove, the play in groove? I don't know. You can see those grooves, but the rest is a bit more textured. It doesn't look like a
It's a bit 3D, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very, very, very strange.
Well, I think, I mean, it is a record, and it is, there is just enough groove in there. But if we ask young Tom nicely, he might be able to put it on the record player next door, and we can see if we can get something from it.
Oh, yes, please.
Well, this is Bach, isn't it?
Mm.
Postcards warp. I guess.
Yeah, it's not 180 gram.
No, but it's fascinating.
It sounds a bit like a marching army in the background. Doesn't
it? It does.
Yeah.
Scary.
I'm just envisaging Eric von Stroheim in Sunset Boulevard, you know.
I'm envisaging the late Terry Jones in Monty Python.
Oh, well, yes. Absolutely, yes, with playing the organ naked.
Yes.
Well, maybe this should be our tribute to Terry Jones.
Oh, there you absolutely. Go.
Well, as the nave of the Cathédrale Saint-Pierre continues to rotate at 78 RPM, that's it for this time on Podcast from the Past. I'd very much like to thank my first-class guests for sharing the postcards from their pasts, Kerry Shale and Lucas Hare. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening. Bye for now. You can see more postcards with their messages posted every day on Twitter. Do follow me, at Past Postcard. And you can buy the book, Postcard from the Past, by me, Tom Jackson, at Amazon and all good booksellers. And if you're looking for podcast production, check out wardorstudios.co.uk.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.